Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the UI Breakfast Podcast. I'm your host, Jane Portman, and today our guest is Chris Hollebrook, a famous information architect and content strategist, and content strategy is the topic for our conversation today. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Jane. Thanks for the famous, even though I'm not sure that that's entirely correct. But anyway.
Thank you so much for your time. We're absolutely thrilled to learn from you. So before we get started, could you tell us a bit more about your background and what you do and what kind of client projects you're working on?
Yeah, sure. So as you said, I'm a content strategist. Sometimes I call myself an information architect or a content designer. You know, there's different flavors or there's different terminology that we use to describe what we do. It kind of depends on the project or the client or the people we're talking to. The type of projects I'm working on recently or for the past few years have mostly been large government projects. And so it's mostly been projects that have dealt with lots of information, lots of content, not so much in interaction or e-commerce or things like that. So it's really about figuring out how to what information to provide, how to structure it, and how to present it, things like that.
Wonderful. So what is your typical project? It's an information-heavy website, which is pretty old, is a pretty big mess, and you need to make orderly content out of it for the new website, or is it mostly about small improvements?
No, it usually is. The bigger projects usually are about, you know, digital transformation projects or things like that, where indeed, for instance, things have been left for too long or they're in an endless cycle of redesigns, and then we usually come in and see, okay, how can we make sense of the mess that's been created? And so it's usually taking what's there, but it's not about it's not so often about smaller improvements. It's usually about, okay, how can we figure this out? How can we take a step back and maybe start over or start doing what needs to be done?
Mm-hmm. Before we continue with the main topic, I would like to take a small break and say big thanks to our sponsor today. And our sponsor today is Balsamiq. You can dare to try new ideas and discover the best solutions without having to learn fancy design tools. Drag, drop, resize elements into your wireframes. It's that easy, and our listeners can try it free for 3 months at balsamiq.cloud. by entering the code UI Breakfast. So big thanks to Balsamiq again. And I wonder if actually content strategy involves any kind of wireframing or drawing at all, or is it all about writing in documents and doing research?
No, actually, there is some wireframing. Obviously, it's not about the high fidelity wireframing, or usually it isn't. It could be, but it kind of comes at the very end of what we do. To describe a typical process, or at least my approach to it, would be to say that I kind of work around four questions. And the first question is, okay, what information will we need? The second would be, what information do we already have, which is what you referred to earlier, you know, is if there's an existing website or whatever. So we take a look at that. Then we also say, okay, you know, based on what we need and what we have, we determine, okay, this is how we're going to approach it. So then the next question is, okay, how can we structure this information so that people can find it and use it? And then the last question is, which is digging a bit deeper, is okay, and how do we need to present this information? How do we need to present it so people, yeah, can actually do what they came to do on our website? And it's in that last stage. So actually what things look like or how they are presented come quite late in the process. So we don't start off by drawing wireframes. Usually we first figure out, okay, what needs to be here.
Mm-hmm. And of course, as I might guess, user research comes as the foundation for that as well.
Yeah. So as I said, you know, the first question is indeed, we need to figure out, okay, what is the information we need? And there we actually ask two questions. First of all, and the first and foremost is, okay, who are the people coming to our website and what are they coming here for? You know, what is the information that they need? And that's where user research comes in. And, you know, the best way to figure out what people need is to plainly ask them, really. That could be in any different format, from surveys to interviews, etc. And then the other side of that coin is also, okay, but and what is it that we want to communicate? So those are actually the two sides of the research phase, basically, in figuring out, okay, what is the information we want to provide on our website?
Do you have any special favorite methods? For example, we've had Jerry McGovern lately talking about customer top tasks, which sounds pretty similar to the ideas that you described. Anything else? Any other frameworks that you use personally or your team does?
Yeah, so I know about Jeremy McGovern, and actually I've been working with him or with his methodology on some projects, but I kind of prefer to think about tools and not so much methodology. So it's basically about having a set of things you can do and picking the right tool for the job at hand. And it is about, indeed, as you said, it is about figuring out the user's top tasks. And it's about, and doing that is about, okay, so what is it that people really want to do here, so that we can make that really obvious and really easy for them to do? And the other side is that, okay, maybe there's so much, there's so many websites out there who publish so much content that nobody ever uses. Maybe we could make it easier on ourselves if we just figure out what is really important and then focus on that. So we can, you know, do less but do it better. And that is where Jerry also, you know, in his top task methodology, and that is also about that, you know, how can we do less but do it better? And some of the tools that I like to use in that is, well, you know, simple user surveys, really. It's like putting a simple pop-up on your website, basically asking people, okay, what is it that you're looking for today? And I also like to add another question to that, and why do you need this information, or what do you want to do with it? Because that's going to give us a lot of insight as well. So I like to keep it simple and keep it down to one or two of those questions. Like, okay, what information do you need and why do you need it?
So from your experience, do you have any problems with the quality of those survey responses? Because I imagine with large sites, especially government sites, it's a pretty varied audience with a lot of needs, and they might be just, you know, kind of sloppy about their responses.
There is definitely that. So you need to get some volume in to weed out the the jokers and the people just trying to waste your time sometimes. But on the other hand, we found that people actually really want to help, and if you ask them the question, and if they do take the time to answer that, they're usually pretty decent in their answers. And but it's true, there can be some that you don't need or can't use, but the overall majority takes it. If they take the time to click yes, I want to participate in your survey, then they actually do take it seriously, and they really, you know, are invested and want to help. So you get some good results. And the really good thing, because I try to, when I do things like that, I try to work with open-ended questions. So not, so that it's really your customers or your users talking. So you really get a lot of good insights about what people say and how they talk about the information they need and what they want to do.
So I'm curious, since I come from the background where people work with web application and everything that people do inside is typically pretty functional. So it's like, I need to do this to solve that problem. So with information structure, how do you capture those needs? What do you present? Like, what is the output of that first point in your roadmap?
Yeah, so that's the thing, right? So usually if you think about people having tasks or needing to do things on your website, yeah, it can be quite varied. And basically what we encounter is that people have one basic task, and that is, I want to have information on something. And it's the on something that's where it gets interesting, because indeed, if you were to boil it down to the essential task, then it was people looking for information, of course. But it's like, okay, I want to know about funding, or I want to know about legislation, and it's those type of things that you get into, and that's where you start to see, okay, what are people really looking for? And it's also why we follow up, or I try to follow up with a question like, okay, and why do you need this information, and how are you going to use it? And what that essentially gives you is kind of a user story. You know, I need this in mm-hmm. order to do that. So that gives you already a lot of insights that pretty quickly you get past it's all about people looking for information. So it's not, you know, they do have different tasks. You just have to look a bit beyond the initial task, really.
Mm-hmm. So how do you document that as opposed to what you have? Just curious, like what the process looks like. Do you have a stack of cards? Do you have a number of documents that you sort through? Do you have, you know, diagrams or user stories or user flows, like
well,
you said?
So yeah, so the first thing is you do your user research, and that could be a survey, and ideally, but that's not always the case, you could follow it up with some live user interviews, which give you a bit more opportunity to dig into the how people are looking for information and even more deeply into the why and what it is that they really need. So you document those, and by you know, analyzing that and looking what comes up most and what are, you know, percentage wise what are people mostly looking for, that's where you get your you get to identify, okay, these are the top tasks, or this is the most important information, or more people are coming for information about our funding than they are coming about to know about our organization or who's in charge or whatever. So that's the one thing. And then looking into what we already have, that's mostly done through some sort of inventorying, like making a spreadsheet of, okay, what is it that we already have on our And this could be just our current website, but it could be other communications material as well, you know. So what is the information we are, so you document what is the information you already have. And then that allows you to see, okay, you know, does this do, if on the one hand we've determined this is what, this is the information people are looking for, and this is the information that we currently have, how do they correspond? Are we missing things? Or is there information that we currently have and are heavily invested in and nobody's actually interested in that, which happens quite a lot, to be honest. So there's a lot of times you get organizations who are so convinced that what they're talking about is really important to people. And then when you do surveys or interviews, then you actually have to go back to them and say, you know, this thing that you think is really important and you need this thing you think you need to communicate about, not that many people are actually looking for that information, or not that many people, or it's not first in people's minds. So maybe, and that's what I said before, you know, maybe you should shift your focus a bit and maybe invest less time and resources in producing what you think is important, and maybe focus more on what people are actually coming to your website for. Does this answer your question?
Yes, you actually read my mind about my next question, because that was exactly that. From your experience, how surprising the findings are and how different they are from existing structures, but I can tell that there are some surprises. Any interesting case studies that you could share from your client work?
Not directly, but it's not that we don't take into account what the organization thinks, because in our research part we do, okay, what is it that the user needs, and we also actually take a similar approach in talking to internal stakeholders and say, okay, what is it that you want to get across and what is it that you want to communicate, and then we kind of try to match those things and say, okay, if you want to talk about this and people are looking about for that, actually, if we approach it in this or that way, we could, you know, kill two birds with one stone. And if we offer people the information they're looking for, you will actually also achieve your ultimate goal and what it is that you're trying to achieve. Sometimes it's the thing is that especially if you're in an organization and you're dealing with internal politics, or, you know, you're trying, you're especially talking to people like subject matter experts, and they're so into they have such detailed knowledge about the things they are talking about that they sometimes can't take enough, they can't take a step back or have enough distance to think about, well, you know, is this still all still relevant for the people out there, or is it just because, well, we think it's important? And it sometimes, or very often actually, it takes an outside person to come in and say, okay, you know, I see what you're talking about, but when we take an outside look, it's a bit different than what you actually think it is.
Thank you for sharing that. And the next step in your roadmap is giving structure to your findings and materials. And do you have any general recommendations? Of course, all projects are different, but maybe things like structuring things into smaller snippets of information is better than giving people longer guides or something like that. That's common for most of the projects you've worked with.
Yeah, so typically there's two things there as well. So you have the more traditional approach you need to put information in categories and structure it, and then you end up with a navigational structure or a tree structure. Lately, I've also been adopting a different approach, which is more about something called content modeling or domain modeling, which is about looking into the information itself and how it's about looking for patterns in the information and say, okay, these are core content types or types of content. These are the important parts. And for instance, in an e-commerce site, it could be the product page, or it could be an event page or something like that. So you also look into, okay, what are the different types of content we have and how do they relate to one another? Because that, looking into that and trying to map that out and defining the relationships between different types of content will also give you a way to structure your information and to provide a way for people to get around and get from one piece of information to the other without it being totally hierarchical or, you know, because we still have things like tree structures and navigations, and we need to categorize information in those. But it's very rare that people arrive on your homepage and then follow the path that you have set out for them. So more often than not, they're arriving on an internal page or on a detailed page. And if you have something like a content model, then that will help you to map out the paths that your users will take from one page to the next without actually going through your navigation. So it's a bit of both. And it's true with a lot of clients, we tend to start with the more traditional and the tree structure, because the other part can be quite abstract. So sometimes it is easier to take them along in a more traditional approach, just to make it understandable and easier to communicate. And there again, you know, how do you structure that information? It is again looking back to your user research, really, and that's why in surveys and interviews you ask open-ended questions, because there's so much insight you can get from that about how people think about your information or how they talk about your products, your services. What are the words they use to describe them? You know, it's even the simple question of asking what information are you looking for. Then you get things like, even though you know, okay, we'll have this category around legislation, but it could be people calling it law, or they could be calling it regulations or whatever. And it's really interesting to see and to go back to, okay, but what is it that people are calling these things? And that will help you as well in structuring your information and in categorizing it.
Well, you just touched upon a very sensitive point, because even though people might call them regulations or laws, it's still a legal website. So you can't really put wrong terms around the place, even though people use them in household, right?
Yeah. So that takes a bit of, sometimes it does lead to some problems, to some discussions, especially with clients who can get really really attached to, oh, but you know, this is the right way to call it, and so we should call it this way. The thing is that a navigation or a categorization of your website, and especially things like links, etc., they are signposts. They're meant to lead people to the information they are looking for, and that's going to go easier if you use the words that they recognize or that they know. You know, you have to make sure that the effort between what the user is thinking about, okay, I need information about this, and what you're actually calling it, that they don't have to put in too much effort to put one to you know, put two and two together. So and it takes a bit of compromise sometimes, or you know, you could also say, well, you know, your navigation or your the labels you use can deviate from what you call things. They just have to be clear, mm-hmm. first and foremost. And in your real, in and then when you get to the detailed content, then you can explain that actually, you know, what, you know, that we actually call it by another name or something, but still focus on the on what people are calling it or what they are looking for. But it can get quite political or it can get quite difficult in discussions to convince people. But then again, if you use words and especially in government agencies or things like that, they kind of like their acronyms and their jargon, but not only in government. And it's, you can call it that, but if people don't call it that, then they will not put those words into search engines. That's not what they're going to do. And so are you sure they will find your information if they don't know that is what they're looking for? So you better at least help them along the way and put signposts that they recognize so that you can guide them to the information they're looking for. And then you can explain what it is you really mean. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. This, yes, so much. This advice can be applied to any industry. It can be applied to your marketing website, your sales copy, and most importantly, to how you, for example, for web apps, how you call things inside it, because it's exactly the same approach, labeling things as people see them, because we as founders or developers are so biased in our industry and so advanced that we might go for the most complex terms without even knowing.
Yeah, but that's exactly right. So it's not even about bias. It's just that you're so into these things and you're dealing with this subject matter every day. You have to realize that a lot of the people, either whether it is a marketing website or a government website or an application, a lot of these people are not, they're sometimes they're frequent users, but not always. So they don't think about these things as often as you do. So if in doubt, always go for clarity. That's my motto. So make things clear for the user.
Yes, absolutely. And give us a recap of the last step, which is definitely not the least important, which is presentation of what you got of the information.
So we figured out, okay, what do we need? What do we have? How are we going to structure this? And then, which is how we get people to the actual information. And then we, as we go along, we get more granular and more detailed. And then it's about, okay, now we're on a page or in a section of the website. And then it's thinking about, okay, and now what is the best way to present this? And that's where, for instance, from your research, you can get a lot of information there about, from the questions about, how are people intending to use the information or what do I want to do with it? Or even there, you know, your top tasks on a more granular level can appear. For instance, let's think about if we were on an event page. We could have a lot of information and we want to talk about, we want to have some promotion or we want to talk about the speakers or we want to talk about the practical information. But actually, if we go back to our user research, what people really first want to know is, well, what is an event? It's a date, it's a subject, and it's a location. You know, because I need to know the date to see if I'm free at all, and I want to know the subject to see if it's interesting to me, and the location just to determine whether I can get there, yes or no. And only after that, if I decide, well, yeah, this actually looks interesting, then you can hit me with the rest. But don't bury the essential information underneath all the background that you think is important. So it's the same discussion again, but on a more granular level. So again, even when you're at a page level or something, or a template level, again, you can think about your top task and what do we need to put up front for the user. So they, first of all, they need to know that they have arrived on a page that is actually going to give them the information they were initially looking for. So you need to make that clear. And then you need to present that information in a way that they have indicated, this is why I need it. This is how I'm going to use it. So that informs a lot of the work that you will be doing on how to structure information within your page.
I'm just curious, since you work on the strategy level, do you just provide the strategy recommendations, like what needs to be displayed to the design, to the UX team, and they work on it, and you review, or do you not review, and how does it go around?
Yeah. So ideally you would, ideally it's a kind of a cooperative effort, and a lot of this depends on the size of your team, because what I'm saying here and the way I'm describing it here, it could be different people doing it, but it could just be you doing every step of this, up to and including, you know, a more detailed wireframe or something like that. So yeah, it could be. It depends on your on the concrete situation, because quite often we are asked to wear different hats and play different roles. But typically, what I would do is based on all the research and the structuring we've done. By the way, I've not mentioned that. You know, when we do structuring of information, obviously we also test it and do something like tree structure testing or something. But then, yeah, when we get to the page level, we draw some wireframes, and they could be, in some situations, you would have sketches just to make, because the main purpose of something like a wireframe is to communicate ideas. It's not a goal in itself to have a very polished and nice deliverable. It's something, on the one hand, it's to have something so you can communicate your ideas or, you know, the conclusions of your research to other people in your team. And a second thing that you would use them for is so that you could run some first user testing as well on those, like, okay, present people with these sketched wireframes and say, okay, now we can start testing and see if this indeed corresponds to what people had in mind when we did the research. But yeah, so it depends from project to project or whatever the situation you're in, how polished those things would get.
So the recommendations and methods that you're using on large projects, you would probably, could they be applied to smaller projects, like, let's say, a small marketing website or a knowledge base for SaaS? Do we still follow the same steps while preparing our information?
I think you would. Because, and of course, as I said, you know, then it might, you just doing everything, or, and it might not be so involved, but you hear, sometimes I hear, there's two things, or we don't have time or budget to do research, or the other thing is, oh, but we know what our clients want, which is even more dangerous. But, you know, I always say that, especially in things like research, a little bit is better than nothing. And just do what you're comfortable with. You don't need to do actual user interviews. You could do a small survey, or which could be, as I said, just a pop-up on your current website or whatever. Or you could send out an email asking people to help, or you could go to your analytics, or, you know, search logs, anything, any little thing would help and could even inform some more thorough research later on, but even starting with a little. So the basics would still go, even though you're dealing with a smaller website. You know, even then people would have top tasks, or it's good to think about and research, okay, is what I think needs to be done really in line what my users or my visitors are expecting. So yeah, and okay, then your the structuring of your information would not lead to such huge tree structures or anything, but still you would still do it, and you could still test it by running a tree structure test where you ask people, okay, could you find this information and where would you look for this and things like that. So I do think that the basics or the approach goes for any type of project, really.
Wonderful. Thank you for all the insights today, Chris. Unfortunately, you have to wrap up. But I wish we had another half an hour so that we could talk a little bit more. But could you please tell us where can people find you and your work online?
I'm currently working for a company called Internet Architects, and that's internetarchitects.be, which is in Belgium. And I myself, you can find me on Twitter and on LinkedIn. LinkedIn is just by my name. Twitter is C. Heulebroek, which is my very unpronounceable and hard to spell name. So it might be best that you add that as a link to your
absolutely
to the podcast.
Show notes.
Yes. And so yeah, please get in touch, and I'll be glad to discuss this some more or answer any questions.
Thank you, Chris, for giving us insight into this amazing industry of content, which is so exciting and so hard. And I hope you have a great rest of the day.
Yeah, you too. And thanks for having me.